You're listening to In the Drink. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. This is another special episode of In the Drink. Just like the episode of Monte Bernardi that we aired last week, this episode was taped in the pre-pandemic times back in February in the wine cellar of my restaurant, Fausto, in Brooklyn, New York. Today's episode, it was a great conversation I had with Andrea Piccin of the Grifalco Winery in Basilicata. Now, Basilicata is a region really at the arch of the heel of the boot of Italy, so southern Italy. And it's not a place, to be honest, where there's a lot of super exciting wines. And I think Grifalco is just one of the absolute best. So it was such a pleasure to chat with Andrea. He is a young guy who him and his family are doing some really awesome things down there. And I hope you enjoy the conversation. Okay, we're taping here at Fausto with Andrea Piccin, the owner of Grifalco Winery in Basilicata, specifically in Aglianico del Vulture appellation in Basilicata. Welcome to In the Drink. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd love for you to tell us the story of your family and how they got to Basilicata, because I know this isn't the place where you grew up or even where they started in their winemaking history.
My parents were born and raised in next to Rome, very close to Rome. They got married in 1984 and they moved to Tuscany because they wanted to run away from Rome and they wanted to have their own thing. In the beginning, they stayed in a house in the middle of the countryside in Montepulciano in Tuscany. And they had, I don't know if in Italian we say due cuori e una capanna, two hearts and a house. And it was just them. And they had animals in the beginning, sheep and goats. They wanted to farm and had this their own thing. Then my mother got pregnant with twins in 1988 and my father broke his leg. So they said, let's sell the animals. It's not something that we can do anymore. And they had this little piece of Sangiovese vineyard that they had since the beginning in next to the house. And before they were selling it to the Cantina Sociale. And then after that, they said, let's make some wine. And so that's how they started making Sangiovese and Nobile di Montepulciano. In a few years, they became one of the most prominent wineries in the Nobile area. They were doing a great work. And also, it was a challenging time in Tuscany because everybody was focused on becoming famous and making money. It was transitioning to this kind of not more and more about farming and more about making money. So in 2002, they...
With people hiring... Consultants and
people
trying to
consultants
get
trying
high
to,
point score wines
and lots of people like from also from the US with lots of money coming in and thinking that winemaking was a hobby and so buying wineries for a lot of money also because it was Tuscany and after that running away after 4 or 5 years because they wasted so much money because they didn't know how expensive it is to make wine and my parents were always about the winemaking and farming. They like the lands. They like to work the lands. And so they said, let's go. They had some issues with their partner that came in the late 90s. And they took the chance to sell their part of the winery.
What year was the sale?
2002. In 2002, they sold the winery and they didn't know what to do for a couple of years. They had some money to... We were doing fine without them working because it was a good time to sell a winery, but they didn't want to stop. They wanted to work. They wanted to invest all their money in something new. And so for 1 year, I remember I was 11 and my parents were bought a couple of houses in bad shape. They were rebuilding them and then selling them. And that was not what they wanted to do. And so they said, let's find something new. Of course, everybody wanted to go to Piemonte or to Montalcino to do something because it was incredible, but they decided to go to Basilicata. My father's best friend was from a small town in Basilicata, and then he moved to Rome where they met in middle school. And so my father was spent some summer in Basilicata back when he was young, and he fell in love with the place. Also, he was already doing micro vinification in Tuscany with different grapes. He felt that Aglianico was an incredible grape to work with. Mm-hmm. And also, the beautiful thing was that Vulture was a place that was going to become something bigger. And it had the potential to grow so much. But if you could invest money and do something nice from the beginning. And so they decided to start with the Basilicata with Aglianico del Vulture. That was the only choice.
Before we talk more about Basilicata, I just would love to know more about Vino Nobile di Montepulciano, if they had any stories from maybe the early days in the 1980s and what it was like, especially being so close to Brunello di Montalcino and Chianti Classico, which are much more famous.
The sad part is that I have not many good memories or good stories about the Nobile because, of course, you know, in the 90s, Sapor Tuscan were going strong and everybody was going to jump on the train because Sapor Tuscan were selling so much everywhere and everybody was buying it. And the good thing about Montalcino is that they stuck with their disciplinare and working with 100% Sangiovese and keeping it that way. Of course, then they did their their thing in 2000 when they
found out
that the scandal, of course, but whatever. That the disciplinare was still 100% Sangiovese. In Montepulciano, the disciplinare was still something ongoing and they were writing it. And in the beginning, they were talking about lowering the percentage of Sangiovese, Prugnolo Gentile, the Sangiovese that they use in Montepulciano, to 50%, 60%. And I remember my father and my mother telling me the stories with them and some other wineries trying to explain to the president of the consortio, telling him, like, you're crazy, you know, you're destroying the denomination. But everybody was, again, trying to make money and trying to sell. And so that's why they...
And they thought that maybe using some French grapes and Barrique...
Cabernet Merlot was easier to sell. Super Tuscans are easy to sell because everybody likes them, because it's a wine that it's super easy to drink. But working that way, they destroyed the soul of Montepulciano and of Sangiovese and Nobile di Montepulciano. So even right now, they're still recovering from what they did, because there's no line that connects all of the Nobile and the Rosso di Montepulciano. And that's a sad thing, because Montepulciano is an incredible place, and working 100% Sangiovese, it's difficult. Working with 100% Sangiovese, it's very, very difficult. But yet the product you have, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that not many wineries are doing that right now, but hopefully it's getting better. I've been to the presentation of the new vintages in the past 4 or 5 years, and the quality is getting much, much better. Hopefully it's going to get more recognition in the years to come.
I hope so. And so when your parents started the project in Basilicata, how old were you? You seem like a very young guy.
I was 12 when they started making wine in Basilicata, and my brother was 16.
Okay, great.
He's 4 years older than me.
You were telling me before we started, you actually stayed in Tuscany most of the time in your...
Yes, our parents, we had a whole life in Montepulciano. My parents were always okay with moving away from everywhere they were going. They moved out from Rome and they were by themselves, but they didn't want us to move. I was 12, my brother and sister were 16, and it would have been difficult to have us move somewhere else and start a new life, a new school and everything. So they decided to let us stay in Montepulciano, and we stayed in Montepulciano for school. And my father was going up and down with the car most of the times. I think he destroyed 2 or 3 cars for the mileage he had to do.
How far is that drive?
It's 5 hours.
5 hours.
It's not that bad, but still, it was gone for a lot. Like every month, at least 2 weeks was down in Basilicata. I'm pretty sure that was a huge sacrifice they made. It would have been easier for everyone to just move in Basilicata and stay there. I'm very grateful for the sacrifice they did, but it was their choice. We didn't have any saying in the matter, but I'm glad they decided like this.
That's great. And was the idea for Basilicata always right away to start a winery down there?
Yeah. My father was in love with Aglianico del Vulture. I actually asked my mom a few months ago why they had Aglianico in their mind. And she said, I don't know, but it was the only grape that we wanted to work with. And so it was a choice that they made straight away. They said, Aglianico del Vulture, let's go there. And they started buying land. And that was it.
And have they told you some stories as to what it was like in the late 90s? There weren't that many producers. Even today, we don't have that many producers exported from Basilicata.
Basilicata is a very poor region. And being a very poor region, everything is oriented on the farming. Everybody has animals, everybody has his own piece of land, and everybody works the land. And when my father started buying land, he had his idea in mind was to build a winery to make wine and sell wine and make the Ajanico de Vulto recognizable. Back then, there were little to none wineries. You had the famous one, Paternoster, D'Angelo. One of the Paternoster is actually one of the oldest wineries in Italy, 1927, and not much else. And they just he started buying lands, and he was the outsider. He was very much we are still the outsiders because we come from Tuscany. My parents have been living outsiders' life. They were outsiders in Tuscany because they came from Rome, and they were outsiders in Basilicata because they came from Tuscany. And in the beginning, he had to face all these issues because people were looking at him not in a good way because he was from Tuscany. He had all these ideas in mind. And he had to have people from the area actually working with him to have better prices for the land, better prices for the products, better prices for everything. Because if he showed up to buy, I don't know, anything from the shop, they would charge him more. Because it was from another region. It's
wow,
tough times, but it was worth it, I think.
I am so curious, and maybe you don't have the answer to this, but I wonder if there was like a bottle of Aglianico del Vulture that he tasted that...
D'Angelo.
It was.
D'Angelo. D'Angelo was, my parents told me, I remember it was Vinitaly around 10 years ago, I think. Our booths were next to one another, ours and D'Angelo. And my mother made me taste the wines. And she said, this is one of the reasons we came to Basilicata. Because of the work that D'Angelo did back then.
Tell us about the vineyards. How did they go about choosing vineyards and purchasing those vineyards?
Back then,
and has it grown? Have the vineyard holdings grown over the years?
So the interesting thing is that, again, very poor region, so everybody had his own piece of land. And that piece of land was coming from grandparents and parents. And so it was divided in tiny little pieces because you have to give it to your grandsons and sons, so many people. So it's very hard to find many hectares altogether. It's usually around 2 or 3 hectares. So my father wanted to, he was driving around the area a lot, and he was looking for many places, and he started seeing that the soil and the microclimate of the place were different from one another, and you would just move 100 meters and you would have a different soil and a different microclimate. And so he decided to start buying little pieces of vineyards all over the place. So we are around right now 16 hectares, but they're all spreaded all over the Vulture. And that's because my father made a clear choice since the beginning to have different soils, different climate, and different Aglianico del Vulture grown in these places.
And so at what point did you and your brother move down? And is your sister involved as well?
She's not. She's the only one. She works for the International Red Cross. She's in Afghanistan right now.
Wow.
She saves the world.
She saves the world so we can drink wine.
Exactly.
Cheers to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My brother studied enology in Alba since 2007. He studied at university back then. And since the beginning, he was always already a little bit more involved year after year in the winemaking process. My father wanted that. And in the beginning, it was tough. My father and my brother were the same kind of person, same character, same everything. And that means they were fighting a lot. Me and my mother were always there to make peace and keep peace all the time. In 2011, my father started to get sick, and me and my brother had to jump in straight away. It was the first harvest we did by ourselves. It was 2011, I was 19, my brother was 23, and we jumped in straight away to take care of everything.
Did you have a thought that maybe you might do something else, travel, study something else, do a different profession, but then you had to jump in because of that?
I always said that if I ever had kids in my life, I would raise them as my parents raised me and my brother and my sister. That's because another...
So nice.
It's I'm not kidding. It's because my parents never forced us to be in the business. Not because it's just a family business. You are forced to be into that. And that's very uncommon. Usually you're born in the business and you have to do that for the rest of your life. You don't have a choice in the matter. And our parents always tried to have us decide by ourselves what we wanted to do. They said, if you don't want to work in the winery, you don't. You can do whatever you want. My brother was, I think the first time he got drunk was when he was 7 in a fermentation tank in the cellar. And that's why he was always there. He always loved the vineyards. He always loved the cellar. So for him, it was a clear choice. Our sister, she went to do whatever else she does now. And that was clear for her since the beginning. To me, it was something I didn't know. In the beginning, after I graduated high school, I started traveling a little bit. Me, my brother, and my sister, we did a year abroad when we were 17. My brother went to New Zealand, my sister went to Norway, and I went to China. And that was a turning point for all our lives. After I graduated high school, I went back to China for a little bit, a few months, to teach English to students there. That was nice. I traveled a little bit more. I went to San Francisco for a month and a half, staying at A16.
With Shelley Lindgren.
Yeah.
She how great.
Greeted me to stay with her and look at how the restaurant business is in the US. And that was an incredible experience.
Did you work in the restaurant as well? How cool.
It was incredible. She had me jump in straight away. She does too many things, so she's always very busy. So she put me under the GM of back then in A16, and I started waiting the tables, then I started pouring the wine, and at the end of the month I was running the floor by myself at lunch.
Wow.
It was scary, but it was very nice.
And that is a popular restaurant too.
It is. It's an incredible restaurant in San Francisco. After that, I was already doing little bits of work in the cellar in the winery too. But I didn't know what to do. Then I started following my mom more and more. She invented the PR for wineries back in the 90s. She was one of the first people doing that precisely. And also...
Not just for Salchetto, but other wineries
too? For other wineries too.
Oh, wow.
And also she was probably one of the first women doing that. I remember people calling in Salchetto, in Tuscany, in the 90s. And my mom would answer and people would say, can you put me through your husband to talk business? And she was like, no, I'm in charge. That was back in the 90s. Nice. So I started following her because I could learn whatever I needed to learn. And I found out that I was actually good at it and I enjoyed it much. Traveling, selling wines, it was really nice. And so I don't say it grew on me because I actually fell in love with it straight away. And so I decided to jump in. And since then, me and my brother, we took care of everything.
Is China now a good market for Grifalco wine? No.
China is, for us, but I can talk for many other wineries. It's French have been there since the 70s, 60s. So they have the market. And Italian wines they came late. So it's much more difficult for us to jump in. Also, they have so much land and they're growing their own wine now. They're paying so much money to have the people from France and Italy just going there and make wine for them. So it's a very strange market.
Well, it sounds like if the Chinese market ever opens up to Italian wine, you'd be a good person to introduce them to.
I'd love to.
To Grifalco. But I know you were telling me before, it's really a family business, right?
Yeah.
So it sounds like maybe you're more involved on the commercial side, but I'm sure you also do some winemaking as well. How do you divide the responsibilities and what does that look like?
Like I said before, my brother and my father were the same person. My father was very shy and traveling for him and selling wine was always something that he didn't like to do. And my brother in the beginning was like that. I was always more open. To me, it was always easier to speak to people and share the experience of winemaking. And so it was always easier to have this thing divided. My brother was doing the production, I was doing the commercial. But it's a family business, so we have to do everything together. And it's just me and him in the cellar. So whenever we're in the cellar, we take care of around 75,000 bottles, and we do it by ourselves, me and my brother. So I have to do the winemaking too. And also during the harvest, he has to stay in the cellar because he has to know where everything goes during the harvesting. And I'm in the vineyards taking care of the people working and doing the rest of the job. So it's always, we have to do everything. My brother travels too now. He got much better at doing this. And now he enjoys it to travel a little bit. So we try to divide. Also, he had a kid last January. Last January. So she's 1 year now. And so wanting to spend more time with the kid, he had to give up a little bit of the work in the cellar, so I had to jump in a little bit more, and then he had to travel a little bit more too. So it's divided right now.
You said that your brother and your father are very similar type of people, so they would fight a lot.
Yes.
And that you two are different. Does that mean that maybe you get along really well?
The beautiful thing about me and my brother and my sister is that we get along really well. My brother and my sister are twins, and I'm 4 years younger than them, but we always had a really nice relationship.
One of the things that amazed me about what you do is that you really focus just on one grape, the Aglianico grape. Do you grow anything else at all?
We do not. It was an easy choice because there is not much else in Vulture. Historically, it's always been Aglianico. It's always been red wines. It's interesting because it's a volcanic soil, very high altitude. It's very windy, temperature excursion. It's super strong. So it would be a really good fit for white wines because of all of these things. And yet it's always been Aglianico del Vulture. So we only grow Aglianico del Vulture, and that was a choice that we did since the beginning. So working with 4 different labels, we try to have them telling their own version of Aglianico del Vulture. And now, since 2014, we did Arrosato from Aglianico, but we make it not from Salasso, Sagné. We do it in the press for on the skins for a few 35 minutes, and it's enough to have a dark color, and then we have it in the tank for a few days for fermentation.
I like to think of it as like an intentional Rosato.
Yeah.
The idea is always to make the Rosato.
Yeah.
Not the Sagné, where the Rosato is sort of an afterthought.
We wanted to have a something. My parents were doing only reds in Tuscany too. And then they were started doing only reds in Basilicata too. And me and my brother wanted to have something different, I guess. And we wanted to have a Rosato that we liked. A Rosato that we would drink, a Rosato that we would buy. We didn't want to make a Rosato just to make it. And so we decided to make it in that way. It's difficult because it takes triple the effort, but it's worth it. It's a beautiful Rosato.
Why does it take double or triple the effort? And is it a specific vineyard plot that you choose for it, or an earlier picking? How do you go about it? And I say the few Aglianico Rosatos that I've tried, I've loved them, even from producers who I didn't love their other wines. So I'm excited to hear about this project, but how do you go about it?
We don't have the same spot every year. We just decide in the beginning. We harvest around a week earlier, a week to 10 days earlier than the usual harvest. And then we put everything in the press early in the morning with the first batch, when the first batches come in. Usually when you put the wines on the skins to have them to get a Rosato, you wait 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, depending from the grape. Aglianico del Vulture, you do it in 35 minutes, 40 minutes. And that's the amount of time that takes us to steam the grapes, put them in the press, and then get everything out of the skins. And then we put it in the fermentation tank for around 20, 25 days. It stays there for 20, 25 days, lower temperature. We don't have temperature control, but it stays pretty low. I'd say that it takes more time and more effort because when you do Sagné, you just open the tank and take off the liquid and that's it. When you put everything in the press, you don't want to waste all the skins. So you have to put them somewhere else. So it's always, it takes a lot of time to take everything out of the press and then put it back into the tank for the fermentation. So it takes longer. We usually start at 6 in the morning and we finish at midnight when we do the Rosato.
Do you allow for the fermentation to start spontaneously or do you?
Spontaneously. It's always been like that since the beginning. Also when we were doing the first couple of harvests when we didn't have the cellar yet, the fermentation would start spontaneously straight away. And my father and my brother told me, because I wasn't much involved in 2007, when we had the first harvest in the new cellar, they were scared that the fermentation wouldn't start because everything was super clean, everything was new. And yet they started in 12 hours, I remember.
Wow.
And since then, it's always been like that. We would love to have samples of the yeast that we have in the vineyards. We still haven't done it. It's something that we want to do.
Just in case you have a bad fermentation 1 year to be able to...
No, because we didn't have any of that happen yet.
Okay.
But it's something that we would love to do just to see if they're similar to something else in France or in Italy. So it would be really interesting just for the fun of it.
I realize I probably should have asked this a little bit earlier. We've been speaking so much about Alianico. I wonder if you could tell us the characteristics that you think Alianico has, and maybe also the difference of Vulture versus some of the more famous appellations in Campania.
Of course. Alianico de Vulture compared to Taurasi, Taburno. It's a question that I always ask my brother in the beginning because I wanted to really get to know the difference. It's for us in Vulture, we are very lucky. Nature-wise, we have everything we need to have to make a great wine easily. We have the great altitude. Everything is around 400 meters above sea level, even if you feel like it's on sea level. And we have great cold winter. Used to have now with the changes, but whatever.
Hasn't been a real change in a short period of time.
Year after year, it's getting different. And also, we have lots of wind. And the good thing is that in the other regions with Alianico, it's one of the latest harvests in Europe. So you always have that month in September when if you didn't have enough rain in the past month, you can just have them in September, and that helps a lot. Compared to the other Alianicos is that Alianico de Vulture is much more elegant. It's easier to have a balanced wine, very well balanced between all the characteristics, like the tannins, the bright acidity, and the structure. It's much easier to have an enjoyable wine. My father always said that making a great Alianico de Vulture, it's easier than to make a bad Alianico de Vulture. And I think it was right.
When you say it's elegant, do you mean that maybe in Campania it's more powerful, like it has more alcohol, or more rustic?
Yes. I don't want to say bad things about the Alianico de Taurasi or Taburno. I can just say that it's easier to find Alianicos from that region that are just too much. You can enjoy a glass of wine of Alianico del Taurasi, and after one glass you say, that's it. It's incredible, but that's it. With Alianico del Vulture, it's easier to find a bottle that you want to finish all and then have another one.
Yes, I love how even on your sort of top single vineyard wines, the alcohol level is like 13.5% alcohol, where a top Taurasi is 15, maybe 15.5. Yeah. And you're right, even a delicious wine at 15.5% alcohol, maybe it's just for one glass.
It can be too much.
It can be too much for me too. Oh, that's super interesting. I wonder if you have seen an evolution in the style of the wine since you and your brother really took over. Have you brought some new ideas and changed things from the way that your father was doing things?
Our father was, he learned everything for winemaking in the 90s from nowhere. He actually, my mother was working at the photography studio my grandfather had in Rome, and my father was in the Navy. And then they got married and they moved to Tuscany. And out of nowhere, they were taking care of animals and making cheese. And so when they started making wine, it was out of nowhere. They learned from, right now is probably the most important enologo in Montalcino, Paolo Bagagini. He's back then in the 90s, he was studying like my parents, but he had knowledge from university and from the things he studied. And so they started doing things with my parents, and my father learned how to make wine like that. And that was the only way he knew how to make wine. My father was very strict in many, many things, and winemaking was that too. So when my brother started to take care of the vineyards first and then of the wines too, my brother had all these things in his mind that he wanted to do, but my father didn't allow him to because that was not the way. And then he started to do things without telling my father. Like the first thing that comes up in my mind is that I guess in 2011 or 12, he left the lease on the wines for more than 12 months. My father was always taking them out at the beginning. And my brother said, I want to do that. And it's not something that he invented. They do it in France, in Burgundy. They've been doing it since forever. But he wanted to try it with Alianico. And after 12 months, of course, not on all the botti, but after 12 months, he told my father, do you want to taste the wines? And they went to taste the wines. And then he asked him, do you like this wine? And he said, yeah, of course. It's really, really good. Yeah, it's on the list right now. And you didn't know. I think that was one of the first time I heard my father saying, you're right.
Wow.
Yeah. And I can say that since the beginning, my father, when my father moved in Basilicata and started making Alianico, Alianico was still something that people wouldn't buy. They were just like harvesting Alianico, putting it in big oak for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and then saying, oh my God, we have a wine now, we can sell it. And after 5 years of oak, it was just something that you would chew, something that would be impossible to drink. So Ajanica was still that in people's mind. And when my parents came in, what they had in mind was to show people that Ajanica can be very enjoyable, very much ready, and not just to a wine to age forever. And a wine that you could be fresh, could be elegant, could be very well balanced. And the thing that my brother did when he came to take care of everything is that he took this idea and made his own and started to make it more and more and more like this. So I would say that my father started this little revolution in the beginning, and my brother actually made it through.
Yeah. One of the things I love about your wines is that there's a drinkability to them, even the most important wines in your lineup. There's a freshness, minerality, acidity, and it seems like they...
That's really what we want to achieve with all our wines. I remember a Christmas a few years ago, my parents have been stocking wines for a long time from friends. It's very easy to have great wines when you're in the business because you can just like have them as a gift or buy them or steal them from other producers when you're in a fair. So we have a great collection of great wines in the cellar. And I remember that Christmas, we put up 3 bottles of wines that my parents were waiting to drink for maybe 20 years, 25 years. And all 3 of them were corked. And that was the moment I think my brother, my father, my mother decided that why do we have to wait to drink a wine, then finding out that it's gone? So the idea is to have Ajanico. Of course, you can age Ajanico, but of course, you can drink it as soon as possible. For us, it's easy because in Italy, wine is food. It's always on the table. It's something that you find on the table since you are a kid. So pairing it with the right dish, it's always easy. And that's what we try to tell people. A wine can be aged, but you can drink it right now if you pair it with the right dish. And that's what we try to have with all our wines.
So you think throughout your lineup of wines, you can open them and drink them right away?
Yeah.
I know the Grikos is really meant for young drinking. And then the 2 single vineyard wines, you release with some age to them.
Yeah, we age them at least 3 years between big Slavonian oak and then 1 year in bottle. And that's also because of the disciplinare. We have to, for the DOCG, you have to do that. And the thing is that, of course, if you release them after a few years, you appeal to more people because more people are going to enjoy them straight away. But I really think that any wine can be drink in any moment. You just have to find the right pairing or the right moment for yourself to enjoy. Your palate changes from day to day. Mm-hmm. So a wine that you don't enjoy one day, maybe the day after is going to be incredible for you. It's a mindset.
Yeah, I know Aglianico is one of the grapes in Italy which can potentially age the longest, if not maybe the longest.
Of course.
I've had bottles of Mascia Berardino Taurasi from the 1920s that are really interesting.
And still going strong.
The 30s that were really strong. Do you think that Vulture also has the aging potential?
Oh, yeah. You can age our wines. I'm not saying that you don't have to age them. I say that you can drink them now, but you can age them as long as you want. The first vintage for Grikos was 2006. First vintage for Grifalco was 2004. Damaschito 5, La Ginestra 11. So we have a wide range. We're not too old because we started in 2004, but we still have a wide range of wines that can be drink now. And even the Grikos, a wine that is meant to be drink as soon as possible. The one from 2006 is still going up.
Oh, wow.
So it's still great. So you can age them for as long as you want.
I think that shows the inherent quality of the Ajanico grape, of how great a grape it is.
It's a great grape.
Do you consider yourself to be part of a movement in Basilicata? I mean, I know you said that 20 years ago, there were really only a very small handful of producers. Now here, at least in New York, we see more than 2 producers. There's maybe 10 producers or 8 producers available in New York. Like what is going on in Basilicata? Are there young producers? Are there people doing new things?
When my father started making wine in Ajanico, in Vulture with Ajanico, so you have to, you know for sure, Italians like to fight. Italians likes to talk bad about each other between regions, between small towns, Tuscany especially. So in a consortio, you always find people fighting, people having the wrong ideas and stuff like that. But the good thing is that when you have a consortio that works well, even if you fight internally, you show up and you do your thing. So the consortium works well for everybody. When my parents started working in Basilicata, they found out that that was not the case. People were resenting each other for things that happened 50, 60 years ago between their own parents. And it's really common to have families completely destroyed just because of something that happened three generations ago. And that's something that you can find easily in the consortium or in between producer. There was not a team. People were thinking for themselves. People were, I always said that what I found out is that it didn't matter how well you were doing. I had to do better. And if there was something that could help us both, I wouldn't do it because it would help you too. So it was always like this. Yeah. And my father had this mentality of a teamwork. You have to show the you have to talk about the denomination more than yourself. And my father started this little revolution in the beginning with the wines and also with this new mindset. And in the past few years, we found out that people, producer want to team up. Finally. And the good thing is that now you have a higher quality between producer, of course, because people started to study more and started to do things more naturally. And then the new generation of producer, people that inherited from their parents, like me and my brother, or people that just wanted to make wine in their own region, Basilicata, this new generation had a new, an open mind. And they wanted to do things differently. And so, like right now, I can talk about Generazione Vulture. Generazione Vulture is something that we started a couple of years ago, thanks to Ian D'Agata. We had a tasting with Ian at Vinitaly. Mm-hmm. And he asked some of the producers to go there, and we organized by ourselves to show up and to taste the wines with journalists and Ian. And after that, we decided to... We actually found out that we like to spend time together. So... Even if it's something that we try to do as much as possible, everybody has his own, everybody's busy. Everybody's taking care of his own thing. But we are 8 wineries right now. We're called Generazione Vulture, so it's a new generation of producer. And what we try to do is to spend some time together. We like to have dinners. We like to drink lots of wine. It's very fun to... We're friends, and that's the beauty of it. And the other side of it is that we're promoting the denomination. We're doing tasting here in the US too with Ian. We went to all over Italy to have tasting and to show the wines. And the most important thing that my father told me and my mother told me is that if you go by yourself and you try to promote your wine, there's a certain point that you can reach. And after that, nothing. The first thing you have to do is you have to promote the denomination. You have to talk about what Ianico del Vulture is, what it can mean, the potential. And then you can talk about your winery. You still have to promote what all the region can do. And then you can reach 100% of the potential of the of your winery and of the denomination. You have to put the denomination first. You have to put Ianico del Vulture first. And that's what we always did.
And are there any constraints as to who can join? Is it just people you want to hang out with, or do they have to be make wine in a certain way? A new producer?
Right now we are 8 just because we started a couple more than they left. But it's just because we are people with the same attitude to winemaking and to problems. And so it's easier for us to keep us together. We really hope that we can do more with more wineries, but that's something that we have to wait and see and wait for it to happen.
What is the attitude that you all have? Is it an artisan approach to wine? Is it a balanced
more,
wine?
A more natural approach to wine. So when I say natural, I don't mean organic. We're organic, but not all of us are. It's not that important for us. It's more of let the Ianico be Ianico and not something else. So the old ways of making Ianico, like I said, forgetting the wines in oak for a long time and then selling it like a piece of oak, it's not something that we do. We try to work with the elegance. We try to work with the balance. We try to, and also, again, each one of us thinks that the denomination has to go first.
Okay, one last question. So the Autostrada is the highway in Italy.
Yeah.
And I think I'd read that Basilicata was the last region or one of the last regions to get the Autostrada to come through.
Is that true? We kind of don't have it.
You don't have it.
I mean, we have it, but it's not the biggest one. Basilicata, again, it's very poor. It's not connected well. Also, the trains are non-existent, and that's all over southern Italy. And the streets and the roads are very, very bad. Potholes everywhere, and you destroy tires like maybe twice a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you make truly beautiful, elegant wines in the region of Basilicata. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. This has been a great episode of In the Drink. I loved having our guest Andrea Piccin on. If you liked listening to this podcast, please consider subscribing at Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you were to give us a 5-star rating, we would so appreciate it. Also, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, feel free to send us an email at inthedrinkpod@gmail.com. I want to give a big thanks to Jessamine Molly, our producer of Seaplane Armada Productions, and a big thanks to you for listening. You know, next week we'll have one more special episode that was taped a few months ago with Michael Cruz of Cruz Wine Company. It's a great interview, and I hope you'll tune in. Thanks again.